Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program Today's Issues here on American Family Radio. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim Wildman, as the announcer just told you. And joining me to co-host the program today, as they do most Wednesdays, is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson, our news director for OneNewsNow.com and American Family Radio News. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, all.
So much going on. We got Abraham Hamilton III coming up at the bottom of the hour, our constitutional attorney. Some good news out of California regarding some of the churches there and their right to exercise their constitutional freedoms. We'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour with Abe. Got three big news stories. You got what's going on in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Republican National Convention, which is going on. And then you got the hurricane approaching the Gulf Coast, especially along the Texas-Louisiana border, Fred. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. And the projections are not good this morning for Hurricane Laura, now expected to come ashore anywhere in the western side, Galveston, on over through the Louisiana coastline, and then, of course, into the, I guess, western half of the Mississippi coastline. They're now saying it'll come ashore Category 4 hurricane. So we're talking winds of 130, 135 miles per hour when this thing hits shore, either late tonight or very early tomorrow morning. And of course, as always, you got to talk about the surge. You know, you're talking 15 to 20 foot of surge possible. On top of that, you've got rain, which hangs around for a while, even after the hurricane moves on. So emergency evacuation orders have been in place for the last 48 hours. Lake Charles area on through that area, Houston, Texas, as I say, over through Louisiana. All the warnings out there are saying, take this seriously, folks. This is one of the worst hurricanes that we have seen in years, and it is going to do catastrophic damage. And if you're not out of there now, it may be even too late. The authorities yesterday saying for those who refuse to leave, and there are always some, that you better be prepared for not being able to see any help for you for at least 72 hours after this thing hits.
Well, that changed overnight within 12 hours.
Yes.
It intensified because, well, what happened is it got out over the Gulf of Mexico, the warm waters from summertime.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's what feeds the hurricane. So it went from being a one to being a potential four. It's a three now, a potential four, category four hurricane. Well, you know, when you talk about the areas you've been naming, Louisiana, Texas, we have so many listeners.
Yes.
Right.
And the Lake Charles, Lafayette, Baton Rouge, all the way over to Texas. We're on the air in Corpus Christi, I think, and mm-hmm. some other communities mm-hmm. that are going to be affected by. Now, Houston's is Houston in the.
Oh yeah,
really?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, and they're just barely getting over Harvey.
Yeah,
3-4 years ago.
I didn't know that Houston was in the target zone. I'll have to look at that real quick. But it's a big storm, and so it comes ashore tonight. You said.
Either late tonight or very early tomorrow morning is what they're projecting.
Yeah, 380, according to the Fox News website, 385,000 people were ordered to evacuate the Gulf Coast ahead of the storm. So, you know, those folks go north to Monroe and Shreveport and Dallas and, you know, Jackson, Mississippi. And I guess if you live in... You might go Houston, you might go over to Waco or San Antonio. Anyway, yeah. All those hotels fill up within a couple hundred miles of the where the storm's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have friends or family, you have to go to a hotel. I mean, where else are you going to go? Mm-hmm. So sometimes people, like in New Orleans, will have family in Mississippi and, you know, maybe Arkansas. But other than that, you just got to find a hotel and you keep driving until you can find one.
Well, I know during past hurricanes, Katrina and others, we've had our hotels in the Tupelo area fill up with people from New Orleans, even to come that far to get away, you know, because you get, like you say, if you don't have family to stay with, you got to keep driving down the interstate till you get to a hotel. Anyway, that's a major news development. We'll be watching that for the next 24 hours. I'm sure Steve Tiber and 8 Days of Hope, our good friends there, are already getting ready to go.
Right.
To
help. They have a kind of a rapid reaction team.
Hey, I was watching the governor of Iowa last night. Mm-hmm. Her name escapes me. Do you know, Fred?
No.
Her name?
I don't.
The governor of Iowa. She was. She spoke for just a few minutes.
Kim Reynolds?
Yes, at the Republican National Convention. And she mentioned the storms that hit Iowa a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Had hurricane, I don't know how I missed this because I'm a news junkie. Had hurricane force winds in the middle of Iowa.
Yeah.
That wiped out.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, wiped out like all kind of crops.
So it wasn't. It wasn't a tornado. It was.
Wasn't a tornado. It was some kind of freak storm. Do you remember this?
Wind shear. She was talking about how quickly the president responded to that. But
yes.
But it's just one of those stories that got lost for some reason.
Well, this must have been something. 115-mile-an-hour wind, she said, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's in the middle of Iowa. It just doesn't, like you're saying.
I've never heard of that.
Not me either. I've never heard of anything quite. Maybe 50, 60, 70-mile-an-hour winds, but not.
With a bad thunderstorm or something.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was possible to get those kind of winds.
She said it was the largest natural disaster in the history of the state of Iowa. So anyway,
I don't know how I missed that either.
Yeah. So anyway, I know that Steve Tiber and 8 Days of Hope are in Iowa right now responding to that.
Okay.
So you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. All right, Fred, go ahead.
Well, also, as you mentioned, the other major story going on, and we'll get to the Republican National Convention in just a few moments, but last night, two people killed in the midst of the violence in Kenosha, Wisconsin, in the wake of the shooting of that young man on Sunday night. Now, the reports are unfolding, and so I'm quoting what I've been reading in the last half hour. And the sheriff in Kenosha used the word vigilantism. What the report is a young man seen amidst that crowd last night, another night of violence there in Kenosha, running with a high-powered rifle in his hand. They are apparently looking for this man. As I say, the sheriff is using the word vigilantism. Two people dead. They were shot. And what this sheriff appears to be saying is that there was someone there who deliberately, accidentally, whatever the case may be, shot two of the people who were there protesting. Now, that is the story at this hour. But the sheriff used the word vigilantism. And this is something that a lot of people have been afraid of with these protests in Portland and other places, that people would take up arms to defend themselves.
What's wrong with this whacked out governor?
Listen, that's another part of the story.
Good night.
This morning, this Democrat governor, they requested close to 2,000 National Guard and other police forces to help out. He sends in 150.
Well, listen. Listen to what he said in response to this. I can't understand how these people think, huh?
Tony Evers.
That's his name. Evers. Tony. He's a governor of Wisconsin, a Democrat. According to this story, has called for calm earlier Tuesday while also declaring a state of emergency under which he doubled the National Guard deployment in Kenosha from 125 to 250. That's paltry, seems to me, for what's going on there, 250. But anyway, the night before, the crowds destroyed dozens of buildings, set more than 30 fires in the city's downtown. But here's what he said in response to this. Listen to this. This is the governor of Wisconsin. Quote, we cannot allow the cycle of systemic racism and injustice to continue.
Yeah.
Then he goes, we also cannot continue going down this path of damage and destruction. What are you talking about? What system, what cycle of systemic racism and injustice? He's acting like these protesters, these rioters, they have a legitimate cause to be out there wreaking havoc and destruction because, by golly, they're responding to systemic racism and injustice. No, they're not. They're just destroying things because they can and because they are anarchist and because they have no parenting or whatever the case may be. Don't put a caveat on this. You know what I'm saying? So when he begins his sentence with his paragraph with, we cannot allow the system of systemic racism and justice to continue. Are we talking about the young man who was shot by the cops the other day who was fighting them?
Jacob Blake.
Is that systemic racism?
That's what he's saying because immediately, remember within hours after Jacob Blake was shot, this same governor, Evers, said this is not, he started off by saying, although we don't have all the facts, one thing we do know for certain is that this isn't the first case where young black men have been mercilessly killed by police. So my first thought was, if you don't have all the details, how do you know anything for certain? And how do you know that Jacob Blake is shot in the same way that you're saying other young black men have been shot? And then, you know, video shows maybe this isn't clean cut or clear cut.
He threw the cops under the bus from
within
the
get-go. Hours.
Huh?
Right.
After saying we don't have all the details.
Right.
He convicts the cops.
Right. We don't have all the details, but I'm gonna basically condemn the cops here.
Right.
And if you saw what happened, again, police can make mistakes. And in the heat of the moment, they can do things that in hindsight you say that went against your training, or right. that was wrong, or you blew it there. I mean, obviously they're human.
Right.
Right? But almost inevitably, the two things happen in these cases. One is the suspect fights the cops. Why doesn't the governor of the state of Wisconsin say, you know what, this young man would not have been shot had he not fought the police officers and resisted arrest, and he had a warrant out for his arrest because he was a violent history. Why didn't he say that? And then say, we pray for the young man. We're sorry this happened, but the cops are not, don't go jumping on the police officers. There'll be a full investigation.
Right.
And if they've done anything improper, that will be revealed. But at this point, it appears this man was fighting the police officers and went to his vehicle. They're all telling him to stop, stop, sir, stop, stop. He goes and puts his hands inside a car. And this guy had a history of confrontations with police officers.
Right.
So I don't know why a governor can't say that. Why do you default to systemic racism and injustice? What injustice?
Well, the narrative that, and here's to me the answer, I'm not saying I understand the mentality behind it, but it seems clear to me that the majority of the Democratic Party, the leaders, are in this camp now. They are in the camp of automatically saying the police are guilty, that they're racist, that America's racist, that every young black man who gets shot is shot because of racist cops.
That's insane.
But how else can you explain the governor of Wisconsin not doing what you said? That would have been totally...
I'll tell you how you explain it. Am I ranting, by the way?
Wednesday's a good day to rant.
Okay. Well, sometimes topics deserve a rant, I guess. I would say it's hard to distinguish between what the motive is here sometimes because people... let me just say it this way. I think, yes, there are some people who believe in the Democratic Party and the left that believe in if this is all because of systemic racism and injustice. Although it's not logical, because you got to take every case individually and see what happened in the individual case. You can't have people anyway. The alternative, or the other option here, is that they're pandering. That the Democrats, a guy like the governor here, is smart enough to look at this video and go, "Hey, the guy's fighting the cops, and he has a warrant out for his arrest. He shouldn't have done that. I should probably say something to support the police officers here, and then wait for the facts to come out." So I would think this governor, if he's smart enough to be elected governor, would be able to have that approach if he wanted to. However, if you say to yourself, if you're the governor and you're a Democrat, and you say, "You know what, I can't say that. I can't say that because the mob will come to my house, my mansion. So I better go with systemic racism and injustice, and even if I don't believe it, because I also need to pander."
But I think they do believe it. I think this governor does believe this narrative. And it may also enter into it that he doesn't want to get canceled, or you know, have the mob outside his house. But I think they do believe it.
I think it's the default position of these Democrat governor, mayor, leaders. Now, just when an incident like this happens, the default position is the cops have done wrong.
Do you know where this leads? I mean, the dominoes fall. This approach that the governor, the state's top law enforcement officer, basically, he's not a law enforcement. Well, yeah, he is. Top executive.
Right.
If your default position is that the people who are charged with keeping law and order in your state are wrong right off the bat, without even knowing the facts, I'm going to criticize them. What does that lead to? To me, that leads to the total breakdown.
Yes.
Huh? Total breakdown, because everything's illegitimate. Everything's an injustice. Everything is systemic racism. That's what's happening in Kenosha. How many people live there, you said?
About 100,000. A little bit over.
Yeah. Well, all right, Fred. You guys have any thoughts on this in terms of where this leads to ultimately? Look what happened in Portland, look what's happened in Seattle, and look what's happened in New York. It leads to more violence, more chaos.
Well,
it leads to fewer cops. Go ahead, Fred.
Anarchy.
Yeah. And here's what's happening. The other story this morning in relation to all of this comes from Washington, D.C. Some folks are sitting down at a restaurant. Bunch of protesters come in and say, "You better show you support us or else."
No, they were targeted because they were white people.
Yeah, their pictures.
By other white people who said they were for Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
And they told them, "Raise your fist in support.
Or else."
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep in mind, so these are people who are having lunch or having dinner, minding their own business at an outside cafe in Washington, D.C. along the street. And you have this, they're like 30, 40 people maybe?
Yep.
Come up to them, they're having dinner.
I mean, leaning over them.
In their face.
They weren't 6 feet away.
In their face.
Now, Fred, I've watched some of that. I don't recall, I may be wrong about this, but it seemed like they were all picking on ladies sitting by themselves.
Yes.
I didn't see them doing it to any men.
I did.
No.
You did? They
did. Yeah. But they were chanting, these protesters, "White silence is violence."
Well, they would have seen real violence had they done it to me and my wife. I mean, because I'm telling you, they were leaning over these people in their face.
Yes.
And to me, that's the same as assault.
Yeah. Yeah. Most of them were, looked like to me, like they were white college kids.
Yeah.
On spring break or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, what are we going to do today? I don't know. Why don't we go harass people eating at a restaurant outside?
So we will feel good about ourselves.
Yeah, demand that they raise their fist. What was raising the fist in solidarity with
Black Lives Matter?
Black Lives Matter.
I, All right. See, now I'm starting to rant.
That's okay.
Like I say, I would have raised my fist.
It's a rant.
We raised my fist, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know.
And the thing is, what you're saying, where this leads, if police won't stop that kind of thing, people will take matters into their own hands.
Yeah, and that's where it starts to get really scary, folks.
Yes.
Well, that's where we're headed, and it seems to me this is where the Democrats, or at least maybe Democrats.
Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House. Remember when asked about tearing down statues? Yeah. Well, I don't care about statues, and people are going to do what they're going to do.
So lawlessness, Nancy. What about that? That's basically was a question to her, and she was saying, "I don't care if they're lawless."
Yeah, because the reporter
said, "If it serves
our
purpose."
The reporter said, "Don't you?" Because she said, "I don't care about statues." And the reporter said, "Well, don't you think those statues should be removed after a committee gets together and goes through the this and that?" And she said, "Well, people are going to do what people are going to do." What kind of answer is that from the Speaker of the House?
So the leaders of the Democratic Party in our country are agreeing with the rioters.
I believe they agree with it.
Well, what other conclusion can you come to?
You don't condemn
Portland, Oregon. What is it? Night 85 of violence again, and the mayor, the governor, they sit back and they allow this to continue. This can't continue. It cannot continue.
Well, that video of a week or so ago of the couple in the pickup truck, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And they beat this guy senseless?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you something. That wouldn't happen where I live.
No.
Huh?
And that would be a shame for someone to get blown away.
People of Oregon.
Right.
First you look at the governor, the mayor, and then you look at the governor, and then after five or six weeks, you go, I guess the people of Oregon don't give a rip.
Yeah.
Huh? Because it's just another day in Portland.
Yeah.
Huh? I mean,
well,
how else do you look at this? Now, I know we have listeners in Baker City and other places. I know not everybody's agreeing with this, but I have to assume that the majority of citizens of Oregon don't have a problem with this. At least a problem with this rioting and mayhem enough to recall their mayor, for example, or demand that the governor do something.
But
they're feeling no pressure.
But now that this goes back to the other thing you said, who's going to be brave enough to call a press conference or to start a petition to remove the mayor because the mayor won't turn the cops loose and break up these protests? You're going to do that, and you know these mobs are going to be at your house. So maybe what they're saying is, you know what, they're not in my street. They may be burning down businesses, but it's not my business. I'm going to mind my own business, keep my mouth shut, because I don't want this trouble coming my way. I don't want them burning down my house.
That's in case you've lost your town.
That's right.
Yes.
That's third world thinking.
Yes.
That's third world thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
Believe me,
if you combine the fear factor, which you just mentioned, with the pansy attitude.
Right.
Huh? Then you got a majority of people who are too weak to do anything to protect their community. I mean,
yes.
I'm sorry. That's so it just makes you wonder about the mentality of. I know a lot of people make fun of flyover country.
Yeah.
You know, as a bunch of yahoos who are conservative and red states and everything like that. But I guarantee you, this kind of junk going on in Portland would not happen in a red state, because the governor or the mayor would crack down.
And the police would not.
And the community would support the crackdown.
And the police would not arrest or at least not charge someone who is defending themselves.
No.
The cops would say, listen, you surrounded their table at a restaurant. You were leaning over them, yelling and screaming at them. And he broke your jaw? You deserve it, moron.
Right.
Don't do that.
Right. All right, the Republicans having their national convention. There were some excellent speeches last night. We'll talk about that. And more Abraham Hamilton will be in. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word.
Look, in an age of cancel culture, somebody said, well, what about Bill Clinton? Why does he get a pass? And the CNN host said, well, we believe in redemption. Yes, when the person has the right politics.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
You know, folks asked me about our annual tour of Israel. Tim, is it safe to travel to Israel? To which I respond, we'll only be in New York for a few short hours. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Israel is actually one of the safest places to be on earth because they take their security so seriously. So we're going to have a wonderful, safe time in Israel in March as we see the Holy Land. The Bible will come to life. Again, that's March 16th through the 24th. If you want the information to find out whether you want to go with us or not, just go to the website, twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to your home, just call us at 800-FAMILIES and leave us your name and address, and we'll get that right in the mail to you. 800-FAMILIES.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Senator Tim Scott, the Republican from South Carolina, delivered a powerful speech at the RNC condemning those who accused President Trump of being a racist. He also laid out the true intent of Democrats.
Make no mistake, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris want a cultural revolution, a fundamentally different America. If we let them, they will turn our country into a socialist utopia. And history has taught us that path only leads to pain and misery, especially for hardworking people hoping to rise. Instead, we must focus on the promise of the American journey.
A cultural revolution, ladies and gentlemen. That's what's at stake in November. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live, noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. We failed to mention the last half hour. You can watch this show on Facebook or YouTube. And we also post a lot of stories that we talk about on our Facebook page. So just type in Today's Issues and go to Facebook or YouTube and you can join us there. We also podcast this program every day. Thousands of people download the podcast, of which we're very grateful and appreciative. You can get that at afr.net.
You know what else you failed to mention?
What was that, Ed? Point out my failures, Ed.
It's my birthday today.
Is it really?
It's my birthday.
Happy birthday,
right,
brother.
I'm 62. 62 years old.
Fred, go ahead and sing. Sing happy birthday to
No, please.
Ed. Brother Abraham Hamilton III.
Good morning.
How old are you, Abe?
I'll be 40 this year.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. You poor thing. You're just an old man.
You're never going to catch Ed.
That's right. By the way, I have a message for you.
Uh-oh.
From Alan. I'm looking at some of the Facebook comments. I don't know what this even means. Hi, Abe. Please let me comment on your show. Please. Do you not take comments or something?
Yeah, I do.
Well, I'm not sure, Alan. I'm not sure what you mean by that, but I thought I'd pass it along. So.
Go ahead and comment now.
What's your comment, Alan?
What's your comment? Nobody's stopping you.
I got a couple. I got a bunch of happy birthdays, okay, even from Alan.
All happy right. birthday, Ed.
Yes.
So you're, what are you?
62.
Yeah. All right.
Tonight I'm going to A son and daughter-in-law.
Nowhere to go but up, right, Ed?
I guess that's right. Huh?
Your back says
yeah.
You're getting younger, and your neck says you're getting younger. I told Allison last night.
This was all about me, but now we're going right to you, okay?
Well, that's how we are humans, right? Hey, all of us are like that. We see a group picture. Who do we look at first?
Yeah.
We look at number one.
That's right. I don't care about the rest of these people. I want to see if I look good.
Look, my hair wasn't right there. Anyway, I told Allison, I said, I'm starting to get up every morning. I'm 57.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right behind me.
Yeah. I said, I'm starting to get up every morning and feel like my breakfast cereal.
Snap, crackle, pop.
I don't. Yeah. I like Rice Krispies treats. I'm not a big Rice Krispies cereal man, but you do feel like snap, crackle, and pop.
And I'll tell you, you really know you're starting to get old when you start catching yourself grunting every time you get out of a chair.
Oh.
That even happens at 40, probably, doesn't it? If I remember back. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Pardon me, mid-popcorn here. All right. So, Fred, you had a question for Abe about the church situation in California?
Yeah, there was another court decision yesterday, this one from the California Superior Court, where Judge Mitchell Backlove issued a 5-page opinion with regards to the County of Los Angeles denying the county's renewed application for a temporary restraining order against Pastor John MacArthur and his Grace Community Church. Abe, how many times is this now that the county has been told you cannot tell this church that they can't meet?
Yeah, this is the third or fourth. And specifically, the county again sought a temporary restraining order to prevent the church from being able to meet this Sunday.
Yeah.
And the judge once again said, you know, your application fails. Substantively, it fails on the law and it fails on the facts. So you can't do this. And a part of the judge's reasoning is that the full hearing on the merits of the case, so the temporary restraining order, would be a temporary order issued in the interim time period between the issuance of that order, the county hoped, and the September 4th hearing that's coming up just another week away. And so the judge just said, listen, the full hearing on this issue will be litigated on September 4th. You lose again. Stop trying to prevent these people from meeting in the meantime, while we litigate and come to a conclusion on the full matter on the merits before the Superior Court. And for those who may be confused, in the California state court system, the Superior Court is the district court in that state. So it's the lower court in the state of California.
Let me ask you this, Abe. So this is good news for John MacArthur and his church.
Yes.
Okay. And now he gets a lot of attention because mm-hmm. of his notoriety and because he's a public figure. Mm-hmm. A lot of churches are going through similar things in California, similar attacks.
That's right.
But it's not in the news every day.
I mentioned one yesterday on the show.
Go ahead.
Is that the video you sent around?
That's the video I sent around.
That was sad.
It's extremely sad.
Why, talk about it.
Pastor Jack Treiber, who is the pastor of North Valley Baptist Church in Santa Clara, California, which is north from where Pastor MacArthur's church meets, they this past Sunday had the county health officials come and nail a cease and desist order on the door of their church and assess them a $5,000 a day fine, which began on Sunday. The fine has been tabulating every day, not because the church didn't take precautions, not because they didn't so physically distance in church, not because they didn't have, you know, all of the hygienic things. They have their pews where they have every other row is the only place that you can see. All of those precautions were observed. The church was assessed a $5,000 a day fine because they sang during worship. The county informed Pastor Jack Treiber that they had sent spies into the church and observed the church's worship practices.
This is like communist China.
This is. If I would have just read the facts without saying the names of the people and without saying where this stuff took place, most of us would have thought, man, that's crazy how the Chinese treats
right.
Christians, how they treat churches. This is in the United States of America, in California. And to Tim's point, Pastor Jack Treiber is not as well known nationally as Pastor MacArthur. It's a pretty pretty large church that this is happening to.
And they do a lot of good work. From this video that you sent around to leadership here at AFA, he was talking about all the work they do, the busing ministry, they feed the poor. I mean, they do all kinds of stuff to impact the community.
Which highlights the irony, irony is not an appropriate description. I would say the specific attack against worship in a Christian church, because the county allows the church to do all of these other services. They had not been able to do them for 24 weeks. And then when they started these other things, their service to the poor, these other things, county had nothing to say. They only had an issue with the church gathering for worship. And it is because of the worship that included singing that the county slapped a $5,000 a day fine on Pastor Jack Treiber and the North Valley
Baptist
Church.
Are they paying it?
To my understanding, they have not paid it to date, but this story is now starting to get more attention around the country. So as far as I know right now, they have not paid the fine. But this is one of the cases that we need to continue to watch and monitor to see what happens, because this is a direct assault on the authority of Scripture and the authority of the church to operate independent of Caesar's edicts.
Can I ask Abe a question here? Is there something on the law books in California that forbids people to sing in a church if there happens to be a so-called disease in the area?
No laws in the state of California, only the governor's order and the state health officials' efforts to implement Governor Newsom's order.
Are you allowed to talk or whistle if you go to Walmart to buy groceries? Is that okay?
You can talk and whistle. You probably could even sing in Walmart if you want to buy groceries. The only place you can't sing is in the California Christian Church.
One of the things you're pointing out here, Fred and Abe, is happy birthday, Ed. By the way,
is it my birthday?
Well, you're looking at me like you wanted me to say it again.
No, so I was not.
I'm kidding, Abe. So this is one of the things that Dr. MacArthur pointed out the other day that you're talking about, and that is these aren't even laws that are being applied. These are mandates, edicts, regulations that are meant for temporary use. Mm-hmm. By temporary, I mean days or weeks. Mm-hmm. In an emergency situation, that are now being applied indefinitely. Mm-hmm. And that's what John MacArthur was saying. If the state of California wants to do something to crack down on churches, then now, I wouldn't think this would be constitutional anyway, but I would just say that the appropriate way to do this, I think this would be to pass a law in Sacramento at the State House and then have Governor Newsom sign it and say, we forbid churches from singing in the state of California until such time as we allow it. Because that's what's being done.
Yes.
By some county commissioner or mayor or public health official. Am I right?
That's the effect of what's happening.
Yeah. Okay. So John MacArthur say we wouldn't concede the point that it's constitutional then, right?
Right.
But just saying that these people aren't even going through the proper process.
They're not even pretending. And Pastor Treiber made note of the fact.
Was he on your show?
No, I just played audio.
Okay.
Because he released a video yesterday.
Very humble.
Very humble. He said, we are a law-abiding community. When this information concerning the coronavirus first broke, we stopped everything for 24 weeks. For 24 weeks. And the initial call was to flatten the curve. And he said, well, now in our county, the mortality rate is approaching zero. There's the emergency is not present.
He said there's only been less than 200 people in the county have died of it.
Yes. Yes.
In the county of what? Do you know?
I don't know. It was Santa Clara.
It was in the millions, I think.
Okay.
Santa Clara County. I'll look it up. Go ahead.
And he explained that why would the state of California and the county allow us to do all of these other things, but not worship. And he said this, he said, quote, "You can't have any law against assembling in God's house. None. I know we have a constitutional right to worship, but we have a higher power that we answer to. I have a biblical mandate. We have obeyed authority in this church. We've always obeyed authority. But when local authority begins to disregard this authority," as he pointed to his Bible, "we go with this book right here," end quote.
It's 1.9 million people in Santa Clara County. And he said it's less than 200. And he said, listen, we know it, even one life is precious, it's made in the image of God. But he said, this is not.
It's being used.
That's
it's
right.
It's being used to control people.
It is.
You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I want to switch topics, Fred, to the convention for just a minute. By the way, last night, the First Lady spoke at the end of the evening from the White House, from the Rose Garden. But before she spoke, there was like, an all-star lineup of speakers and rich content, some of which, I say all-star lineup, some of the folks I didn't even know are was hearing for the first time. But they were highlighting basically the ideals and beliefs of the Republican Party and the Trump administration and a lot of the accomplishments that they've had, the Trump administration. By the way, you don't consider all the things that they've been able to do till you hear them listed. And but one of the highlights to me, guys, was this, among many highlights. Eric Trump's speech, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Rand Paul, the gentleman who's the AG from
Kentucky.
Cameron. Yeah.
Daniel Cameron. Was an excellent speech.
That's he's a rising star. Keep his name. Cameron, what?
Daniel Cameron.
Cameron.
He's the first black attorney general in Kentucky.
He'll be governor or senator one day. He's a very bright guy and obviously a believer. You could tell, and a constitutionalist. But I got to say, nothing pleased me more than to see Abby Johnson speaking before the nation. That's her name, right?
That's her name.
Okay. And the reason for that was, here she is, a former Planned Parenthood manager, office manager, and
Employee of the Year.
Planned Parenthood is the largest provider of abortions in the world. And she was given an opportunity last night to tell the nation her story, at least part of her story, and to explain what abortion is.
On the national convention platform.
Yeah. Now, when you say President Trump is the most pro-life president we've ever had, I guess you could say with possible exception of or equal to Ronald Reagan, here's the situation. The reason why that was powerful last night, that Abby Johnson gets to talk about what it means to be pro-life, even to the point of describing what happens in an abortion, which most Americans don't even think about because it's they don't want to. We don't want to, right? And our mind sort of rejects that kind of, I don't want to go there. So, because it is a horrible thing, abortion. And I could describe it. I think most people have heard what happens in an abortion. She was talking about, if children are in the room, you don't want to get them away from what I'm about to say. But Abby Johnson was talking about how the babies, she first watching an unborn baby be sucked out of the mother's womb with a vacuum.
In pieces.
Now, that's grotesque.
That's evil.
That's evil and wicked, but that's what she was describing. So when people say they're pro-choice, I don't think the majority of people who say they're pro-choice, if you said, are you for sucking a baby out of a mother's womb piece by piece, they would say, I'm not for that. Well, if you say you're for pro-choice, that's what you're for. But the point is that I don't think in there any other administration or any other candidacy, be it McCain or Romney or Bush, there would have been a place for Abby Johnson's testimony in prime time on national television.
Right.
Never.
So I got to applaud President Trump and Mike Pence, the vice president, and the team that put together this convention. They're not hiding. They're not trying to put the pro-life cause on at 11:30, you know.
Right. When no one's watching.
When the janitor's sweeping up the hall. Oh, right. Yeah, you go out there and make your case there. We'll see you. See you tomorrow at the convention. No. President Trump and his team, Abe, said the pro-life cause is so important to who we are, we're going to feature it in prime time with this young lady from the formerly Planned Parenthood, Abby Johnson.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, frankly, President Trump is the most pro-life president, certainly in my lifetime, in history, really, even exceeding Ronald Reagan when you see the things that he's done so consistently. And this is one of the areas I am convinced that it has become a deep conviction for him. I think he and the GOP made Abby Johnson a primetime speaker because they believe the issue is a primetime issue. I really do.
Doesn't
believe,
he know, though? Doesn't President Trump know this is too controversial?
Too divisive?
Too divisive?
I think the president has rightly concluded that the abject evil of ripping children apart in their mother's womb is more important than anyone's perception of it being a divisive issue. How can we, as a nation of people, wax that we are a civilized nation, while we simultaneously have people lamenting what's happening at the border,
right,
under the false moniker of children being separated from their families, how about children being separated from their limbs?
Yes.
And no matter how divisive the issue may be perceived by some, I think the president has made the calculation that it's too important to allow divisiveness or the potential for divisiveness to cut against the importance of having to be a central feature of his effort to lead the country.
Well, one of the other things, I watched the part of the where President Trump introduced Hope for Prisoners founder John Ponder.
Mm-hmm.
That boy. Now this is a man who was in prison for, I think, bank robbery or something, but came to Christ in prison. And I don't. You can watch this. It's on Fox. It's only about.
I have that clip, guys.
Oh, all right. Well, let's hear some.
Who are we about to hear now?
This is President Trump introducing John Ponder. Okay, last night. It's cut number four.
While John was in prison, he began reading the Bible and listening to Christian radio. One day, he heard Reverend Billy Graham on the radio proclaim, "Jesus wants to be Lord of your life." On that day, John dedicated his life to Christ. He spent the rest of his time in prison studying the Bible. When he was released, he heard a knock at his door. It was the officer who put him in jail, FBI Special Agent Richard Beasley, who said, "I want you to know that I've been praying for you." Now, Richard and John are best friends, and we are grateful that Richard is here with us today.
Now, when I heard that, listen, President Trump was not talking about, I don't know, I'm just saying, he was not talking about Jesus Christ and about the Bible and about prayer like someone who has heard about it from somebody else. To me, whether he's a Christian or not, God seems to be doing something in his life, because to present a Christian testimony the way he did, the president,
yes.
Okay, that was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I gotta tell you,
as his handler, he has got to start listening to me. Because this religion stuff, this God stuff, is gonna cause people to go away from and not vote for him.
Right. I mean, Democrats are trying to get rid of any mention of God even in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes. Right. Yes. So we need to follow their lead.
Objection.
Tongue in cheek. Tongue in cheek.
What I'm saying is, it's refreshing to have a president, and who would have ever thought it would be a New York billionaire playboy who would be doing this?
Yeah.
I'm talking about his past life. Don't misunderstand me, folks. I'm not condemning the president now. I'm talking about that's been his history. Isn't it like God to use somebody of that background to today be talking about Jesus Christ and the Bible and redemption? Right.
Yeah, Billy Graham, and then he pardoned this guy.
Then he pardoned
John
him.
That was, I'm telling you, that if that doesn't make you catch your breath, Then this, and I don't think this John Ponder.
He didn't know.
He didn't know it was coming because he was visible.
You got to go watch this, folks. Have we put this up on our Facebook page? You got to go watch this.
Yeah,
this
it's only about 5 or 6 minutes. It's not long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you probably need some tissue.
Yeah.
Because this guy, it comes as a total surprise.
Yeah, somebody's probably going to open the window wherever you are, and your allergies probably will start acting up.
Yes.
But, you know, the thing about it is, back to just one more point about the president. I mentioned this after he was elected or during the election process, the campaign process last time. President Trump, he doesn't know enough to know he's supposed to stay away from us.
Yes, evangelicals. Huh? Yeah.
The evangelicals is what he used to call us. I don't know if he still does or not, but it was so funny. It's like we were monkeys in a zoo on an island. Hey, look at the evangelicals over there, honey. That's what he would refer to.
Throw a tangerine.
That's what he would. He's grown up in New York, and he's really never known any, quote, evangelicals much, yeah. Right, in his prior life. So he's getting to know us.
Yeah.
And now he's got a whole bunch of the, quote, evangelicals in his White House.
Right.
In his administration. Mike Pompeo being one last night. I heard him laugh from Jerusalem. But just my point is, after you say to yourself, President Trump doesn't know enough to know he's supposed to stay away from people like us because we're
pariahs.
We're pariahs of society.
Yeah.
And if you want to, the left, if the left finds out you're hanging out with Robert Jeffress and Franklin Graham, yes, and others, huh? They're going to go after you even worse than they do already. So my point is, the president doesn't care.
Yes.
What the left says about him, quote, hanging out with the evangelicals, because he shares the same values and is not ashamed. In the past, most presidents tried to keep arm's distance from, mm-hmm, quote, the evangelicals, Republicans I'm talking about, because they didn't want to be identified with us publicly.
Can I give one quick example of that? In 2003, 2004, mm-hmm, while we and others like us were fighting to get a federal marriage amendment to protect the sanctity of marriage in one man, one woman, we had the hardest time getting our voice heard in the Bush White House. They did not want to touch that issue. We almost had to force that, and we got one line in the president's speech when he had the State of the Union. It was like pulling teeth to get, and President Bush was an evangelical Christian.
Yeah. Yeah. But so anyway, I just say, you know, kudos to President Trump for standing up for what he believes in and it, life, mm-hmm, being friends with a lot of Christians, having Christians in his administration, standing for religious liberty. Hey, William Barr at the AG, the Trump administration at the Justice Department, he's even offered his department to defend religious liberty, mm-hmm, against these states and municipalities that are coming down against Christian churches.
Right.
Like we talked about early in the hour. So what administration would do that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So God bless him. And the people asked, did you guys get to hear Eric Trump?
I did. I heard it this morning.
I can't pick my favorite talk from last night.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I love the naturalization problem, yeah, where he, mm-hmm, we're just
five new citizens were naturalized, yep, in the White House. That was
pardoning prisoners, naturalizing immigrants, making a clear distinction between legal immigration and illegal,
yes,
immigration.
Mm-hmm. It was very clear.
This is not the Republican Party of the Bush and the Romney years.
And yet the left, Bette Midler, makes fun of the First Lady for having an accent.
Yeah.
That's very PC,
yeah,
of the lefties.
It'll, right, cost her.
Yeah. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.